Good evening. I'd like to call to order this meeting on Monday, July the 6th, 2020 at 7 p.m. This will not only serve as our regular board meeting, but also our reorganization. As per Governor Carney's proclamation back in March, authorizing public bodies, including school boards, to meet per Delaware code electronically due to public health threats caused by COVID-19, the Milford School Board of Education will hold this meeting electronically. The public has access to this meeting either electronically or by audio conference. And both of those sites are on our website, those links. At this time, we'll have a roll call.
Mr. Baltazar Lopez.
Here.
Mr. Miller.
Here.
Mrs. Purcell.
Here.
Mr. Thompson.
Here.
Mr. Vesmar.
Here.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Here.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Here.
Let the record show that all board members are in attendance. At this time, we will go to the section of visitors.
That's me. Sorry about that. Give me 1 second. I have Dr. Bridget Amory, Mrs. Edna Rust, Dr. Glenn Stevenson, Dr. Jason Peel, Mr. Jesse Parsley, Mr. John Lobiondo, Mr. Josh Griffin, Dr. Kate Marvel, Ms. Laura Mangus, Ms. Teresa Wallace.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Croce, can you scroll down, please, to the five? Okay.
My apologies. I believe I forgot the flag in the documents today.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We can start now, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I pledge allegiance,
To
the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of our regular meeting minutes for June the 15th, 2020. Are there any questions or concerns or changes or additions that need to be made to that? And if not, then I need a motion to accept them.
I move to accept them as written.
Okay, I have a motion from Ms. Purcell. Do I have a second?
Second from Chris Thompson.
I have a second from Mr. Thompson. All those, I'm sorry. We have to do a voice, a roll call.
Okay, Mr. Baltazar Lopez.
Aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Vesmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
Let the record show that that was passed unanimously. Are there any changes to the agenda?
No.
Okay. And I assume that since it's just the immediate administration and board, that there is no public comment at this time? Okay. So I will turn the meeting out to Dr. Dickerson.
Okay. At this point in time, I need to please request nominations for the Office of President for the 2020-21 school year. This term would last through from now until through June 30th, 2021.
Before we do that, can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
How are we able to nominate a president when our board's not been finalized through elections?
Well, we've talked about certainly with this here. We're able to do this now. Typically, we're supposed to do this in July. That has not changed. He did say we thought we could maybe do it in August. Our appointed board members through the governor's orders do maintain a seat through July. So we had two appointees from the past year that maintain their seats through July. But we thought at this point in time, we generally do this in July and to maintain that. We even with newly board elected, whoever's elected into the two seats that are open at this point in time or will expire at the end of July, they would still be, you know, they'll still be in those seats through July regardless. And that's the best response I can give you here at this point in time. We did talk with our attorney. And we did, it sounded like we did have a little bit of a choice there if we wanted to, but we thought this was the best way. And this still is in regulation to be able to, at this point in time, is still to reorganize the board in July. That hasn't changed.
I understand that, but I just don't know if it would be fair to Gene or Ronnie if one of those were interested in running for either president or vice president. I would have a hard time trying to put them in that position knowing that their seat's not finalized with an upcoming election in 2 weeks.
Just, well, I think if it's discretion at the board, we could hold off. And, I said it sounded like from our attorney, we could do it in August, though it still hasn't changed as far as the July requirement. So even if we had to do this later in July, once we know who is filling those two board seats, I'll leave it at your discretion at this point in time, Ms. Wiley.
Okay. Can you hear me? Because I'm having problems with whether I'm muted or unmuted.
We hear you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I would be at the discretion of the rest of the board. Generally, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I believe that generally you need to have some experience to be on the board before you take an office position such as president or vice president. So I would encourage any new members to learn what it is to be a board member first before they took a position like that. But that's my personal opinion. I don't know if that's shared by others or not. I don't know if Ms. Wiley or Mr. Baltazar Lopez would have an interest in serving in either one of those capacities at this time if they were given that chance.
This is Gene Wiley. I would prefer to wait if I am on the board due to the fact that I'd like to get some more experience and see what's going on. So I would not want to run for an office.
Okay.
This is Ronnie Baltazar. I concur with Chris, Mr. Thompson's opinion about waiting until the August meeting for the reorganization meeting.
Okay. So I have two people who have, so when we have a motion, and from that motion, then we can do a roll call. A roll call to determine what we will do.
All right. Chris Thompson will make a motion to table the reorganization meeting until after July 21st when the 2021 board is finalized.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Thompson. I need a second.
Second, Ronnie Baltazar.
Okay, I have a second from Mr. Baltazar. Are there any questions regarding this motion? If not, then I need to have a roll call.
Mr. Baltazar Lopez.
Aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell.
No.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Besmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
So it looks at this time that we have six board members that would like to postpone until August meeting for our reorganization, and one no. So if the motion has been carried, that we will have our reorganization then meeting in August after the election. Okay. With that being done, we will jump down on our agenda to item, I believe, number 14, which is the superintendent reports. Dr. Dickerson?
Yes, just first of all, I want to share some gratitude from Bay Health Medical Center for Sherry White, Edna Russ, and Debbie Dufendop. Bay Health wanted to express their sincere thanks to all three for the creative and protective masks they had donated to patients and staff during the pandemic. So I know, Ms. Russ, you're on here. Thank you very much for supporting our community, and as well, Ms. White and Ms. Dufendop. Okay, and then also now Dr. Peel is going to, we had some honorees at the end of the year, some recognition for, we have a tremendous staff here within the district, and we had some of our employees of the year, and also some of our retirees who have devoted much time here to benefit our students, families, and our communities in extraordinary ways. Dr. Peel?
Can you hear me? Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, first, we want to recognize our retirees. Peggy Short, as many of you know, is retiring. She has 26 years with Milford and really has been a fixture here with our district office. She will be retiring at the end of July. We will miss Peggy. And also Kathleen Schlabel, retired earlier this last month, and 30 years in Milford, also a fixture in our district office. And those are two folks that work closely together that will be duly missed and did a wonderful job here in Milford for many years. Lulu Ross saw several retirements. Carol Davis, a paraprofessional with 37 years. Sheree Burke, speech pathologist. We had Ms. Lisa Lopez, 26 years. Cindy Peterman, you see, 38 years. And Wanda Quarter with 29 years. All of them served Ross in the utmost capacity and really sad to see them go, but happy for their retirement coming up here this year. So we'll be hard to replace all of them at Ross. Earlier this year, Aaron White retired as custodian, worked at MCA, also Milford Central Academy. Earlier in the school year, Diane George retired. And then Dr. McDaniel retired this last week with 22 years. We thank all of them at Central Academy there for their service. And Mark, who served as administrator in several schools here. At the high school, Ken Outen, a biology teacher, also taught AP biology and has retired with 25 years. And Ms. Deborah Staub, who worked in child nutrition, retired as well. Dawn Deal, I was an English teacher, retired earlier in the school year, as well as Mr. Dave Grabinski, science teacher at the high school, who retired. All of them were big supporters of Milford High School and made that be such a special place for so many years. They will be missed. Next, with our teachers of the year, Jennifer Legg at Morris, the pre-K teacher. We have Kim Webb, who is also our district teacher of the year from Lulu Ross. Sandy Tinsley, Banneker Elementary teacher of the year. Jen Nichols from Miss Pillion teacher of the year. Kristen Schlegel from Milford Central Academy. And Amy Roscoe from Milford High School.
Now, our paraprofessionals of the year, Ileana Heredia from Morris. We have Mr. Robert Newsom, who was announced today, as well as our school district paraprofessional of the year. Mr. Newsom works at Lulu Ross. And Duvenal Lewis from Banneker Elementary. Darlene Gross from Miss Pillion. And Mr. Mike Savage from Milford Central Academy. And Jacenia Carranza from Milford High School. We thank all of our paraprofessionals for the job that they do with our students on a daily basis. And again, Mr. Newsom as the District Paraprofessional of the Year. Our Secretary of the Year for the school district is Sherry White, works at Milford High School. Our School Nurse of the Year is Javon White, who circulates among all of our schools in the school district. Also serves as our lead nurse. Our School Counselor of the Year is Allie Zanks. She is at Ross Elementary. Our Custodian of the Year is Sean Smith at Milford Central Academy. And our Related Services Specialist Employee of the Year is Speech Pathologist Alexis Monticello, works at Central Academy. Our Child Nutrition Employee of the Year is Courtney Boone, works at Banneker Elementary. And then Technology, Josh Griffin, who serves all of our schools out of our technology office. And Mr. Chuck Kaplinger, Maintenance Employee of the Year, also works in all of our schools. So we thank all of these employees of the year. We have a wonderful staff. Hopefully you've seen some of their photos that have been coming across our website and social media as they receive signs in the yard to commemorate their award and honor this year. So it's, we thank all the nominees as well who were up for these awards. And thank them for a job well done.
You have a great group of people there, and congratulations to our employees of the year and also our retirees. Thank you, Dr. Peel.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, just a reminder here to the board that the state right now has three reopening work groups. One is focused on health and wellness, another is academics and equity, and a third group is operations and services. We expect recommendations from the state from these work groups during the week of July 13th. And obviously we'll receive much guidance at that point in time. So from a district planning perspective, we have begun looking and preparing for all students being in, which will be our hope, a hybrid scenario where we may have some in and some out in some type of form. So some may be doing remote and some may be in, and could be alternate days and those type of things, but just starting to explore those ideas. And then also could also be all remote. This will be a lot of guidance from the state will be considered. The recommendations will play a big part on how we go forward. And obviously our main goal was to have as many students in as possible with the hope of having them all in here as we begin the 2020-21 school year. So in preparation, we have been studying recommendations from other states as far as their plans to understand some of the protocols and requirements they have, some of the options that may be out there as well, just so we're prepared for when the state releases our plan. We've been examining buildings as far as classroom size, where signage may be appropriate, purchasing plexiglass, especially in some of our main office areas that don't have the plexiglass there at the main counters. Also at some of our desks as well, especially in some of our special needs classrooms, making sure we have some dividers among desks. So that's already been purchased. We purchased technology, so we have more technology available for like a one-to-one basis for our students across the district. We've also made decisions on our teleconferencing platforms and also our learning management systems and tools where we house our curriculum and instruction and for ways for students and families to receive assignments and instructional materials and a way for them to also return completed assignments as well. We purchased much personal protective equipment at this point in time. I think we have done a pretty good job of preparing for that aspect. And right now we do have, and Mr. Whaley has been very instrumental in this, working with the state here to continue trying to find increased access for some of our families who do not have the connectivity from a technology standpoint. So continue to work with the state in that regard, and obviously here locally as well. We will have more information, like I said, the 13th. That will really, I think, start allowing us to start putting some more concrete plans in place. Our next meeting is not to the first Monday of August. And maybe it's up to the board here at your discretion. If you'd like to, after the week of the 13th, I will get you the state's recommendation as far as board members. Do we want to have a meeting that week of the 20th, maybe on that 20th, just to kind of review some of the recommendations, and we can kind of talk about some of our thoughts during that period of time, just so you're in tune with everything that's going on. Everything's happening, going to happen very fast. We're still trying to understand and really spend a lot of time here also reading the CDC and DPH guidance, preparation for summer school, and Ms. Magnus has done an extraordinary job preparing for that and her team, as well as Mr. Lobiondo, and Ms. Smith's done, we've been doing some professional development, have more professional development this Thursday, and Dr. Peel. So I think we're going to learn some things over the next few weeks, which is going to be very beneficial for us. And we feel we're ahead of the game in that regard and compared to maybe other districts and schools. But just, do we want to have another meeting that week, maybe once we have the recommendations out from the state? Would you like that or not? Just to ask the board here.
This is Judy. I think it would be a good idea. And I think it'd be a good idea to be after the 21st. So that then we would have the election results in, be able to get the reorganization done, and then move on.
Any other comments from any other board members?
This is Jason. I agree with Judy.
This is Gene. I also agree with Judy.
Yeah, I think having that knocking those two things off of our list gives us the most amount of information going forward. So I'm on board.
Okay, and it also allows us to make sure that we are following the guidelines of having our reorganization meeting in July. So do you think that's doable, Kevin?
Our new board members will not take office until August.
That is correct.
So that's the one part of that. So it would have to be August 3rd. We can wait that long. I just know the recommendations come out the week of the 13th, and things will be happening very fast. So that was just the only suggestion here. Do we want to have some type of at least discussion in between tonight and also the 3rd? But that's at the discretion of the board. And if you feel like we'd rather wait to the 3rd, then we can do that that evening.
Personally, I would not like to wait that long. This is Renata Wiley. Personally, I think that we should, if we cannot meet, and do the reorganization then, because I did forget also that the current board members are on until the 31st of July. I really would like to hear what is going on. And also, I would like to know how things are going with our summer school, too, at that point. So I think we should go ahead and have that meeting then, that July the 20th.
We talked about the 3rd. The only thing with the 3rd is we really right now in our calendar have a August 24th start date for our staff and new teachers in the 18th and 19th. That's the only thing I was worried about getting out too far on the 3rd. But again, at the discretion of the board, we'll be flexible and do as you wish.
How do the rest of the board members feel?
I agree that since we can't do the reorg until August, we really should meet sometime in July to hear the recommendations.
Yeah, I think it's too important to wait to August 3rd. I think that it's going to be crunch time by that point. So anybody else like to voice an opinion?
I agree. This is Judy.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
And Gene Wally agrees also.
Okay. It looks like, Kevin, if you can put together another meeting on July the 20th then.
Okay, I just like to keep everybody informed and those type of things of what comes from the state, so we can answer any questions and also start talking a little bit about preliminary planning, how we foresee this kind of taking shape. So thank you for that. And this next brings us to the calendar. So you have a copy of our approved calendar. I just want to talk through this very briefly tonight because it still all ties really into the work groups, the state recommendations, also our district planning. But, you know, assuming we're in some type of hybrid situation or remote or even all in, I think we're going to need additional professional development to start the school year. So I could see us using a couple more days, and you see where students right now are anticipated to start the 28th with our transition days and the 31st with all in. I could see us using a couple of those days for further professional development. I think we're going to have the needs here for professional development from aspects of really, again, preparing for remote learning and learn and things that we did well from past spring and also things we need to improve upon. And I think we're going to need to have further professional development there. We're going to definitely need to have professional development for any opening next year as far as health protocols, requirements, following CDC and DPH guidance, classroom setup possibly as far as spacing of desks and how we have things arranged. And then also I think really important too for our teacher planning as far as in teams, instructional plans and preparing student management technology platforms with curricular documents. So I see a great need in those areas. And I also see the need here for us to make sure, again, that we're having as many families connected here with internet access as possible and have the technology so that students can use throughout any type of remote learning type activity. So I just want to throw that out there and just make sure if you have any questions here, I just think we have enough instructional hours. We can make some shifts, but I think we may need some additional days altogether. And maybe also in person, and maybe not be large groups, but in some person as far as working with each other and make sure, obviously, we keep our social distancing and face coverings and those type of things. I just think we might need an additional couple extra days. So that will all be tied into a little bit what we hear on the 13th. Does anybody have any questions with that, or does that sound okay? If we're just starting to consider we may need some additional PD with all our staff.
I think, Kevin, that a lot of this is uncharted waters, especially for our teachers, and I think they're going to need as much support and training as possible. So it seems to make sense to me that if you need to build it in, you need to build it in at the beginning to help them to be successful, for our students also to be successful. Any other comments?
Yeah, this is Judy. I also think that that's correct. I also think that it is going to be a different kind of opening, even with our young people, because of being away. They left with one teacher. They're going to come back in the building and be with another teacher. Everything is going to be different on, you know, how to come in and with masks and with the distancing. So we need to be very careful with how we talk with them also and help them move along just as we do with the teachers.
Any other comments from any other board members?
No, yeah, I mean, it sounds like a good plan. The more we can do up front, the better. If I could jump back one to when we talk about reopening, just something that I'd like to maybe the district to consider is delaying the enforcement of the uniform policy until maybe the end of September. That way the families who it's really an investment for them to buy the uniforms, that gives them a chance to hold off on ordering and buying uniforms until they know for sure their student is actually going back to school. Let them, you know, maybe there should be some kind of a, you know, a few weeks or the first month of school but we're not enforcing this uniform policy to give the parents a chance to, you know, catch up. So they don't have to buy stuff now. They can wait to know. They know they're absolutely their students going to school, then buy the uniform. So I just wanted to throw that out there for consideration.
Would you like for us to maybe put that down as an agenda item for the next meeting as we come back and talk through different recommendations there, Mr. Vesmar? Would that be
appropriate? Yeah, that would be a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah, because the only thing that I would have would be a concern with not necessarily the uniform, but the kinds of things that they would wear. I would not want to see us go back to, shorts or, short skirts or holy jeans or low-cut blouses, in this process. And I understand about the money and the uniforms, but we need to take that into consideration too.
Any other comments from any other board members?
This is Jean Wiley. Is there an option for parents if they decide not to want to send their child to school at the beginning of the year? Will there be, or is there, or has it been considered, or have parents asked about it?
We have not really had that request through here. However, we've discussed that possibility. There are some other states who have surveyed families. I know Fairfax County, in their initial plan they put out, gave that option for families to have their students stay remote for a period of time. But we'll see state guidance first. And then one thing we have to realize here a little bit here is, one, the recommendations that come from the state, but what are the non-negotiables? So what are the expectations the state have for us that we have to do? And then from there, I think we can build our plan accordingly. But one of the thoughts that we're going to have is what you just said there, Ms. Wiley. We may have some students who maybe have some underlying health conditions that we will have to either serve in like a homebound or remote type environment. So we have had those discussions, but plans really aren't solidified yet in that area, except to list it down as one of the things that we need to think about.
This is Gene Wiley again. What about teachers that may have some underlying health conditions?
That's another one we're going to have clarity with. And Dr. Peel and myself, we were talking about it here a little bit ago, a little earlier. So we're wondering what we're going to get as far as guidance from the state. And we'll have to plan accordingly. And we'll also be talking with our attorney in that regard too. So we could have some we could have some teaching staff who maybe have underlying conditions who maybe help us in a remote environment. But they're all things we have kind of like on our list of things to think about. And we're just really waiting for some recommendation from the state. And then we'll be able to start solidifying and planning this out. Good thoughts. I appreciate you mentioning those. Dr. Peel, that may also be one that we want to make sure we have as an agenda item when we come back and talk on the 20th for that week there. Any other questions? Okay, the next item there, I provided you the DIAA the emergency regulations that they really became effective on July 1st, 2020. And they'll be in effect for 120 days unless it's renewed, amended, or repealed. So just to kind of give you an idea here, right now the state did approve, or DIAA and the state school board, that we can return to play in stage three of this document. So that makes here as far as conditioning programs, open gym programs are permitted during this period of time. Competitions are permitted. Play days or big tournament events are not permitted through this. So we do have right now Mr. Winkleblack, who's working with Mr. Parsley and Dr. Peel and Dr. Stevenson and Ms. Smith, who are working on protocols, just like we've done here. And you'll have Ms. Mangus here kind of explain some of the protocols for summer school in a little bit. We're developing the same for there. Mr. Winkleblack and Mr. Parsley and Dr. Peel will have a discussion with coaches on Wednesday to see how many programs are looking at trying to take advantage of some summertime conditioning type programs, with the idea we would have our coaches trained who will be participating by the end of the week, and the ability next week to be able to bring students in groups and some conditioning programs. Outdoors only to start. Probably looking more to a phase three before we have students inside, or till we feel like we're in pretty good shape from the outdoor perspective. But this will also, I think you've read some of the suggestions there or recommendations. Also earlier kind of showed you the advisory board, the medical advisory board's recommendations. So we will have the temperature protocols and all those set in place. One additional layer we'll also have with our student athletes is we will have a parent sign off. So they understand as far as what the requirements are. Again, if the child is sick or exhibiting any of the symptoms that could be COVID related, to make sure they keep them home and understand again what the conditioning programs would entail. So we'd like to start next week as far as starting to have students come in as far as in small groups, and then eventually be able to expand indoors when that time allows. But so that's just our thoughts. Any questions you have at this point in time? So a lot there. You can see some sports are excluded as far as lacrosse, football, and wrestling right now are excluded from any type of participation other than conditioning type activities.
Kevin, did we say anything about having a waiver signed as far as, you know, how they're doing waivers so you don't sue the school district if your student gets COVID and you think they got it from
or something? We'll have a parent sign off and we'll have our attorney look at it. So I talked to him earlier today about that. He has drafted a couple documents for other districts and he'll work with us as well. So we will have a sign off that does at least acknowledge, I guess I'm going to say the risk, but also the protocols that will be in place and the requirements for our student athletes participating. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Jason Miller. My biggest concern is dealing with hydration. As a coach, I see how that goes down with water bottles all being shared around and everything, you know, all that coming out as far as disinfection of ice. And it mentions hydration, but doesn't give details.
Students will have to bring their own water bottles without any sharing. That'll be part of our protocols that we already have begun drafting here. This just came out the middle of last week, but we will have to really be aware of, and you see some of the guidance in here with the athletics, not sharing equipment and those type of things. And if you're going to do anything, even like when they get in the weight room, you're disinfecting between use of student athletes and that type of thing. But from a standpoint of making sure we have water and those type of things, students will have to bring their own water bottle. And I think that's one thing we probably need to make sure in our plan, especially during the summer, which is a warmer time of the year, is making sure we really ask students to bring plenty of water and not just coming with a little bottle, but probably trying to bring a little bit more than that. And Dr. Peel, as you work with Mr. Winkleblack, it may be also beneficial to talk about, is there a place where we can refill water if somebody is out of water from their own water bottle or thermos, whatever they have in that regard?
And seeing if they're interested in donating water bottles and, you know, already filled water, as well as, you know, individual water bottles per athlete, but also extra bottles of water for those that either forget it or lose it.
Good thoughts.
Any other comments? Any other board members?
I think Jason's right on point. It seems like such a simple little thing is making sure everybody has water, has, you know, available, but it's inevitable that somebody doesn't bring enough, or somebody forgets it, or they leave it behind at this practice and the next practice. So we'll have to have that secondary precautionary step of having like a case of just bottled water that they can to use. Because the last thing we want to do is be very strict on the COVID mandate of having to bring your own water and then have a heat stroke incident or a dehydration incident from trying to enforce one. You have to look at both of them. Both of them are equally as serious.
And the fields right now that we're really looking at using are the the main stadium, also our other both main stadiums there, plus also the outside grass grounds that we utilize for some of our athletics as well. And the one good thing is we have a concession stand there. It does have a refrigerator there as well. So I think that's good thoughts. We ought to probably make sure we have water in those in that refrigerator just in case we need to have extra water for some of our student athletes.
And also make sure to have lots of receptacles so that water bottles are not just left around, because then that's where germs will be spread.
I think at the end of the day, too, I think in good points here, I agree. We may also, and Dr. Peel, I know you're on here, this is so difficult to hear sometimes that when we're on these the meetings, how we have them here now. But Dr. Peel, we may also want to think about having each area have a cooler. So we might be able to house the bottles of water there in the refrigerator and the concession stand. But we may want to have each, whether it's coach, whoever's in charge of that conditioning program, and take a cooler out there with them that has bottled water and ice. And I believe there's ice in that concession stand, but we can look through that here this week to make sure.
I think they're all good.
This is Gene Wiley. I have a question. If one of athlete comes is has coronavirus, what will happen to the rest of the team and the coaches?
Well, every situation, we actually talked to DPH about this a little bit, not so much from the student athlete perspective here today, but the classroom. Technically, they would say somebody within close distance, that 6-foot area for a prolonged period of time. So if you had somebody who was in close distance with somebody, we would also be asking that student athlete to also, stay away for 14 days, basically, or to quarantine for 14 days. If we're able to keep our spacing out like we should with conditioning, we should be in pretty good shape, Ms. Wiley. And as long as, again, we're utilizing all the protocols that are in place from DPH, those type of things. But if we're sharing a lot of equipment or in close contact, that's when we would have to be concerned. Kind of the rule of thumb we received today from DPH a little bit would be, close contact, 10 or more minutes, that type of thing. And they keep on defining really close contact, 6 feet or less. Then that's when we would maybe that other person be self-quarantined. But every situation that we would have here, we do have direct access from a DPH professional who has been very helpful to us throughout the whole since March, and we would still rely on that person. And like she says, that every situation is really dependent on that unique circumstance of the situation as well. I would say, Ms. Wiley, it does become a little bit more complicated when it's inside. So outside, we seem to be better off in that regard. But if we're in an inside type area, technically, in talking with her today, again, Ms. Lubiano and myself talked with DPH today just about this scenario. If you had COVID as far as with a person in a classroom, and kind of what are the recommendations at this point in time? So typically they ask you to let it, once you have notification that somebody had COVID and they've been in there in the last day, you're letting that classroom or that area, inside area, sit for about 24 hours. Custodian goes in then to then do a thoroughly cleaning, disinfecting. We do have the fogging devices at this point in time that would be helpful. So you're really looking at a 2 to 3 day kind of closure of that indoor facility. So not the whole school, but that area itself where the student athlete or the coach or the staff member, whoever that would be, had been in that area, if that makes sense to you. So it's really more that area will be shut down for 2 to 3 days, which I think this conversation comes a little bit later for us, too, because when we start talking about outside building use, you have to understand what we run into a little bit. If we ever have somebody in an area that has COVID, we're pretty much shutting down an area of our school for 2 to 3 days in that regard. So did that answer your question, Ms. Wiley? Thanks.
Yes.
Are there any other questions or comments?
This is Ronnie Baltazar. Dr. Dickerson, I know the document says that it is discouraged for our athletic teams to be traveling to other states for any kind of competition or for us to be hosting any kind of state teams. Are you aware, happen to know, if any of our athletic teams will be traveling to another state for competition or hosting another state team in our fields?
I'm not sure that as far as for fall. Mr. Vassarlo, because we're not really sure what's happening here in the fall as far as what we're going to be allowed to do. But it's something we're going to have to obviously pay attention to as we go in the fall. We do have some scrimmages that I know of. I'm trying to think off the and I think, Mr. Thompson, I can't remember, we still go to Salisbury at all to run cross-country too as well?
Yeah, the Tidewater Classic is the only cross-country tournament that's out of state that they traditionally do, but that doesn't fall until, I think, late September. But those are all, like you said, once we get the we got to get back to school before we get into those.
But right now, everything really pertains for us is really our conditioning, out-of-season type coaching that's allowed to occur during this period of time as far as workouts with teams. This is all what this is really entailing at this point in time. But there'll have to be some decisions made, you know, as we get ready for the school year. And if we're able to have students in and we're able to, you know, have athletic competition, we may have some restrictions. Obviously, if we are still in a stage three and we don't progress out of this document, we would not be able to have out-of-state competitions. So we have talked about that a little bit when they first brought up some of the drafts with Mr. Winkelbleck. He understands, you know, as far as the out-of-state portion. But I can't recall off the top of my head here right now how many events. I do know we have a couple, but we have probably more scrimmages, to be honest with you, to a couple of our programs that historically, a couple of Salisbury schools or Denton area, that type of thing, that we may not be able to do here coming this fall if we're able to have student athletics. Right now, everything would be on grounds right now.
Okay, thank you. My next question is that Section 4.4.31 says that member schools may establish and enforce stricter requirements than the requirements provided in this regulation. Are we providing any other additional measures for our athletics teams besides the face covering, social distancing, and not sharing of water bottles? I'm just curious.
Yes, we will. I don't have, it's pretty much, they go through this in here a little bit more in detail, the sharing equipment. We're going to do the temperatures. We will also record as far as temperatures and student athletes who come in, the record keeping aspect. So that's one thing that's actually happening over the next couple of days to start solidifying that. But we will follow the guidance here. There is also some advisory board guidance given as well, and also any other DPH or CDC guidance that's given as well. Because one thing is right now that this says stage three that we're able to be in as far as from a DIAA perspective, but we're still in a phase two as far as a Delaware reopening at this point in time. And there are a couple of things here that they say we can do here that we have to fall back into what's allowable for phase two. So some of the indoor activities like basketball and volleyball right now are discouraged from phase two of Delaware's reopening plan. And we'll have to abide by that. And then once that catches up to here, then we'll be able to open up a little bit more with some of our conditioning and some of our summer programs.
Dr. Dickerson, this is Renata Wiley. Will you be utilizing the school nurses to help with any instruction or recording or assisting with anything?
Yes, that's what Dr. Peel and Mr. Winkelbleck and Mr. Parsley is also involved. Really talking to the Bay Health right now to see if athletic trainer may be possible. Looking at trying to limit the times that were maybe available as far as during the day so we can have coverage in that regard. So still discussing who exactly is going to take the temperature recordings. They are meeting again tomorrow to start solidifying some plans. Ms. Smith will also be involved as far as helping with professional development for our coaches prior as well.
Good. I think that's important to have Ms. Smith be a part of that team.
She's been very beneficial from all the events that we've done inside buildings and also all of our staff members who routinely come to work as well. Before we've had anybody come in and engage in responsibilities, Ms. Smith has given us all professional development and how to best follow the health protocols and make sure we maintain safety for all.
Are there any other comments or questions from the board? If not, then we should move on to business with Ms. Sarah Croce.
Good evening, everyone. The first thing on the agenda this evening is just our final tax rate proposal. If you remember, we discussed at length the four components of our school tax rate, what each one of them do, and we were kind of waiting for the state budget process to complete before we brought to you a final tax rate for both Kent and Sussex County. Now that those bills have been passed and signed, I have for you here the proposed tax rate for Sussex County, about a 0.8% decrease, current expense staying the same as we discussed in June, tuition tax just declining slightly, debt service declining slightly based on a bond expiration, and then there was a decrease in the minor capital improvement allocation through the bond bill. We'll discuss that in a little bit more detail when we get over to our preliminary budgets, but that's the reason you see the decrease there for our match tax component. So overall, decreasing from 4.8913 last fiscal year to 4.8506 in Sussex County for fiscal year 2021. In Kent County, again, the same 0.8% decrease, same four components, decreasing from 1.7308 in fiscal year 2020 down to 1.7164 in fiscal year 2021. We always like to show you a couple of examples of different home values in both Kent and Sussex County. And again, this goes back to that slide with the two little houses on it that show you if you have a home worth $29,250 assessed value in Kent County, that same house would be worth approximately $10,350 in Sussex County, and the tax bill would be identical there. So throughout those ranges, just a slight decrease this year. You can see there in red the difference from 2020 to 2021 in that individual homeowner bill. Just a side-by-side for the proposed fiscal year 2021 tax rates, again, 4.8506 in Sussex County and 1.7164 in Kent County. I do want to add that that makes us the second to lowest in Kent County, still the highest in Sussex County based on the large landmass that we see in surrounding districts, but we are close to the bottom in Kent County. So, and that's all based on that assessed value. The other thing I want to add is this is the fourth year in a row that we are proposing a decrease to our tax rates, even just slight this year, but this is our fourth year in a row we are proposing a decrease in both Kent and Sussex County in all components. So are there any questions about that? The other item I have for you here is just the tax warrant. This goes to the county. It's signed by myself and by President Wiley when it's sent, and it just details, again, those same four components in Sussex and Kent County coming to the full tax rate, 1.7164 in Kent and 4.8506 in Sussex.
Are there any questions from the board in regards to that? Okay, it is an action item, so I need a motion to accept the Sussex and Kent County tax rate proposals as presented.
This is Ronnie Baltazar. I move to approve the Sussex and Kent County tax rate proposal as presented.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Baltazar. Do I have a second?
Second, Dave Vesmar.
Okay, I have a second from Mr. Vesmar. Are there any questions regarding the motion? If not, can we have a roll call?
Mr. Baltazar Lopez.
Aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Vesmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
Let the record show that the motion was voted on and it went was unanimous to accept.
Thank you very much. The next item I have for you on the agenda this evening is our preliminary budget for fiscal year 2021. Again, this is a process that we do twice throughout the year. Last year we did do an amendment to the budget as we discussed. But this basically just gets us started for fiscal year 2021. You'll see on the state funding side, we are basing our preliminary budget on what is known right now. They have delayed the unit count process to November 13th through epilogue language. So a lot of our state funds are dependent upon that unit count process. So some of them have been removed, like the related services cash out option. That all depends on units earned and whether or not we fill them with personnel or if we have to cash them out to provide contracted services. So we're going to hold on putting an allocation there until we have more certainty. Our division two all other cost allocation includes the full reduction of the 2018 $26 million budget reduction. Our share this year is $736,000. So as we go through the unit count process, you'll recall that we do a give back process for the state in which we can reallocate some funds back to our all other cost line. But initially, there will not be a full allocation loaded upon the FSF system coming up on Thursday. Carrying over our energy allocations, equalization, and most of our transportation funds, we know that those are going to fluctuate. The state has not proposed any additional dollars for changes due to COVID-19 or any sort of learning scenario. So we'll be doing what we can with our current transportation funding. And we'll talk just a minute about some of the state budget increases or impacts in just a minute. Moving on down, I do want to note that the parental leave substitute reimbursement was taken out. That is dependent upon the use of parental leave. It's a reimbursement, so the district charges it the fees for substitute coverage there, and then the state of Delaware backfills that. I also want to point out that we have an increase in our education opportunity grant for mental health. We qualified this year, not only at Ross Elementary School, but for Morris Early Childhood Center for those mental health funds and mental health professionals. So we also will be getting a reading interventionist position at Morris Early Childhood Center through those funds. So two of our four elementary schools now qualifying, providing significant benefit through those student success block grants. The other thing I want to point out, and you'll see this on the expenditure budget, is that our school safety and security funds were removed from the bond bill for fiscal year 2021. Down on the local expenditure side, we are seeing some growth in the revenue and assessed values for this for the Milford School District. So I am anticipating an increase in what our current expense tax rate will bring into the district. Still some uncertainty about some of our local funding, such as interest. We're hoping that obviously interest rates and earnings from those interest rates stay where they have been. They've been quite high for the last couple of years, bringing in a significant amount of money for the district. So still hoping that they remain, but of course, during these economic times, we're not sure. They may be changed and decreased as we go through the final budget allocation in earlier in fiscal 21. Keeping everything else the same, you'll see that the match tax for minor capital improvements matches the funds allocated in the bond bill. And then of course, just carrying over our same fiscal year 20 allocations for federal funds for fiscal year 21. What we are hearing is that our fiscal year 2021 federal funds will be at or above the allocations we received for fiscal 20, but there is likely to be reductions for fiscal year 2022. So we'll be keeping an eye on those as we move forward as well. On the expenditure side, you'll see that our building budgets are based on the unit count process and student enrollment. So we are loading all school budgets at 85% to start the year and get them started. As we go through the unit count process, those will be brought to 100% later on in the fiscal year as we know student enrollment figures. You'll see down the page a little bit further the reduction of $142,000 for the safety and security funds that were removed. You will see the increase for the Student Success Block Grant and the reading allocation, again, for Morris Early Childhood Center. We are seeing a slight increase in our Education Opportunity Funds, and we just submitted and received approval for that grant plan to continue the work that we started last year for our EL low income and students with special needs through those funds. You will also see the decrease for related services. Again, that is driven upon the unit count process. We did see an increase in our allocation for Division I salaries just based on current employees, and the state obviously fills that at 100%. Down under the capital budget, a decrease of $191,000 for our debt service obligations. Again, that is the expiration of that one bond. And then a decrease of $65,200 for minor capital improvements. I will say that we're very grateful at this point that the budget for education was maintained at the current level as best as they could, and that we will see those minor capital improvement funds come back to us. We do have some projects that are in ongoing, including the Ross abatement project that we're getting started this week, and hopefully we'll have another phase of that next summer. So very thankful that we're getting those funds again next year, even with just the slight reduction. So all things said and done, this is not a final, this is just the preliminary draft for right now, and as we go through the rest of the beginning of the school year and through the unit count process, however that looks as of November 13th, we will make adjustments and bring those back usually around January for you. Any questions on the budget, revenue, or expenditure?
Any comments from the board or questions?
No, I think Sarah, you always explain that so well that there's really no need for questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Sarah, I do have one question. I'm sorry, David.
Okay.
Under the school safety and security, where is that, our SROs?
It is not. So those are the funds that were put aside in the bond bill for capital improvements related to safety and security.
Okay.
We've used
those
for a lot of security camera upgrades. We've done some exit door improvements and things like that. So more capital projects, they are not allowable for operating things like SROs.
Okay, I understand. Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions from the board? Or am I the only one that had a question? All right. If that is the case, then I need a motion to accept the fiscal year 2021 preliminary revenue and expenditure budgets as proposed.
So moved. David Vesmar.
Okay, I have a motion for Mr. Vesmar. Do I have a second?
Second from Gene Wiley.
I have a second from Ms. Gene Wiley. Any questions regarding the motion that has been made? If not, we'll call.
Mr. Baltasar-Lupe.
Aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Vesmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
Let the record show that the motion was passed unanimously.
Thank you very, very much. On the same note as the budget, I did just want to provide a couple of updates. The state budget process was a new one for everyone this year, but we made it through all three budget bills, the operating budget, the Bond and Capital Improvement Act, as well as the Grants and Aid bill, have been passed by both the House and the Senate and signed. So we're ready to get fiscal year 2021 underway. And the goal that we were, as it was explained to us, is no loss, no gain for a lot of state agencies, including education, and we're very thankful for that. This budget does fully fund unit growth, so we can continue to provide our students with the teaching resources they need. It does continue the investment in the Education Opportunity Fund, which is much appreciated. We're doing really good things with those funds and really excited for the summer programs that we have coming up using those education opportunity monies. It does provide step increases for all of our education employees. That was originally removed from the operating bill, but as they saw revenue increase throughout the spring, that was adjusted in the grants and aid bill, and step increases were provided. There's also an increase for the transportation formula, and another $2.8 million for private placement costs, continuing the investment in Wilmington Schools Initiative, continuing the Inspire Scholarship, and then there's some clarifying epilogue that was provided throughout the operating bill. So again, an increase to our substitute rates, which is appreciated. It's hard to attract substitute teachers, and we're thankful that the state was able to increase that allocation for substitute teachers. And again, just overall, really thankful to be able to hold on to some of the good funds that we were given to do some really important work at the district level. The final item I have for you is a piece of epilogue that was put into the budget bill, recognizing that district employees who are 12-month employees are only allowed to carry over 42 days of annual vacation leave. And during the spring, there were a lot of education employees who were not able to utilize those vacation days that they had earned. And we're in a use or lose situation. So in an effort to assist employees, the merit agencies allowed employees to carry over in excess of 42 days, knowing that they wouldn't have the opportunity to use them during this COVID-19 pandemic. So the epilogue reads that Department of Education, school districts, and charter schools may, at their discretion, allow leave accrued through June 30th, 2020 in excess of 42 days to be carried forward for up to 6 months. That would begin on July 1st, and then any excess leave not used during the 6-month period shall be forfeited and not paid to the employee. If the employee does separate from employment during this 6-month period, they shall forfeit any remaining excess leave, and this leave will not be eligible for payment to the employee at the time of separation. So this does require school board approval, and we would maintain that for records. I would also just add that we in the payroll and benefits office are tracking those employees who have an excess of 42 days and what they would be earning post July 1st. We do have some 12-month employees who are separating from us for various reasons that we would need to ensure that they did not get paid out for those days.
Thank you, Sarah. Are there any questions from the board regarding the leave carryover? If not, then I need a motion to accept the annual leave carryover extension.
This is Judy Purcell. So moved.
Okay, I have a motion from Ms. Purcell. Do I have a second?
A second. David Vesmar.
Okay, and I have a second. Are there any motion? If not, we need to have a roll call.
Mr. Baltasar Lopez.
Aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Vesmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
Let the record show that the motion was passed unanimously.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay. We will move on now to instruction and student programs, and we will have Dr. Bridget Amory, Dr. Kate Marvel, and Mr. Jesse Parsley.
Good evening. This is Dr. Marvel. I want to thank the board for the opportunity to present tonight. Thank you, Sarah, for cueing my slides. Thank you. So I wanted to present on our honors advanced placement and dual enrollment data trends that we've had at the Milford School District, mainly Milford High School, but also some in the Central Academy. I first wanted to start with the accolades that we have received for this work. In 2018, we won the Superstars in Education Will to Skill program. In that program, we were one of about five or six schools that were recognized across the state for our enrollment within our AP and honors coursework. And then last year, I had the opportunity, this present school year, I had the opportunity to present at Department of Education with higher education offices to talk about what our processes are and how we recruit and work with students to get them enrolled in our programs. And it was across the board, our higher education colleges and the Department of Education suggested that all high schools in Delaware follow our lead. So we have since had a lot of conversations with other school districts and recommendations to work with them so that they can follow our lead. Just a quick overview of what courses we offer. At the honors level, we have 18 courses between 6th to 12th grade. Dual enrollment, we have 9 courses available from 9th to 12th grade, and you can see the Bio 110 and the HLT 320 Personal Wellness are both additions for this next school year. There'll be added capstone opportunities for our allied health and public community health majors. And then finally, we have 16 course opportunities for 9th through 12th graders for advanced placement. And as we grow our CTE pathways, our course offerings are also growing. Many dual enrollment and AP courses are capstones to CTE pathways, or majors as we call them. And in turn, this is adding the number of students that are involved. So we have eligibility and entrance requirements. While we do review this, we do pride ourselves in essentially being an open enrollment for all three opportunities. The goal of Milford School District Honors AP Dual Enrollment Program is to provide opportunities for enrichment and advancement for all students. And all students are reviewed on an annual basis placement in Honors AP Dual Enrollment Program. Selection is based on various data points, and I'll go through those in subsequent slides. We do help recruit and draft our students, so we don't like to rely on students feeling confident enough themselves in saying, hey, I want to take an honors AP or dual enrollment course. We really go out to help them understand how it would benefit them to enroll in these. So we encourage entry at any level. Many schools, once you start at an advanced placement or an advanced standing in an elementary school, you're kind of pigeonholed all the way through. However, we make sure that we give entry opportunity at every level. Milford High School has identified ideal starter courses to ease students into the rigor. So for example, AP European History and AP Government are known to be two of the more feasible AP courses. So if students are hesitant or worried about the course load, we try them there first. And then once they see that they are successful, they'll jump into other courses.
Dr. Marvel, can I add here?
Yes, absolutely.
Jesse Parsley, folks, good evening. A couple of things that we looked at here. Our first advanced placement opportunity is in 9th grade with AP Human Geography, and according to College Board, that's the class that, for lack of better words, is the easiest for students to have success. And what that does at that 9th grade level, it really gives students an opportunity to see that they're capable of doing so much more. And so we've really expanded that from about 30 kids or so to over 65 students this year. And it's really about giving them that first taste, that first bite at the apple to see that they're capable of doing high level work. And it really encourages them to take some further classes down the road.
And just to go off of what Mr. Parsley is saying, dual enrollment shows much of the same of that. We see that students that are hesitant or say that they're not going to college, that if we get them into the English 101 or 102 course and they feel successful and they realize that they are very prepared for courses like those, that they continue to, they end up seeking out Del Tech or four-year colleges where they weren't the students that necessarily thought they would do that in the first place. So I think that is also increasing our outlook for our students. And then we do go out and we, like I said, we go out and recruit. We can't rely on the students having confidence in themselves. We have conversations with families and encourage them to participate. And through that, we accept self-identification. So the student saying they recommend themselves for the program, a guardian can recommend this, or a teacher can recommend the students for any of these programs.
And a couple of those, a couple of the courses you have to keep in mind are sequential. So for example, a student can't take AP calculus without having pre-calculus. So there's still some sequencing with some of those advanced placement courses, but by and large, the majority of them students can enroll without having prerequisites. So obviously, you know, the AP physics, you want them to have some pre-calculus exposure, and AP calc obviously with pre-calc exposure. So there's a couple of those, but by and large, you know, all of our social studies advanced placement courses and our science advanced placement courses, there's no prerequisite for you know, from a sequencing standpoint to be enrolled in those courses.
So as far as timeline, we have this very structured because it feels as though as soon as we start 1 year, we need to start looking at the next year to make sure that we have our students ready and prepared. So in January through March, we look at identifying the potential students. So we start gathering our data. We have a parent interest meeting that involves both MCA and MHS parents and students. And then we start looking at the interest forms and the recommendation forms and that data collection. March to April, we start getting the teacher input. So whoever has said they're interested, whoever, whatever teacher has said that a student is capable of doing something or a school counselor, we combine all of those students, we put them in a list, and we mark down which courses they want to take. Teachers are then given that list to make recommendations or comments. And even if it's to say the student may struggle in this asset or this piece of this course, it's not going to keep them out of the course. It's going to help them know how to better assist them in the next year. We also look at universal screeners. So the data collection that is, it includes, but it's not everything we look at, is the assessment scores, course grades, and the recommendation. And in May, we start making our decisions. So you'll hear some of our teachers call it our draft day. It's really our review committee comes together, which includes our content teachers, our building and district administrators. And this is where we go through each individual student and talk about what are the best courses, what are the courses these students say they want to take, and how can we help maneuver them. Sometimes it's a student that's signing up for three AP courses and they've never taken an AP course. Sometimes there's the sequence piece that Mr. Parsley just alluded to. We talk through this, and this usually takes a full day or two to make sure that we are making decisions and making sure all the opportunities are available to our students. And then from there, we fill out invitations, and in May, we send out those letters that invite students. Very rarely are we saying that this student is not capable of doing something. If we are, it may be the sequence factor, and we suggest the first level of that AP course or dual enrollment or an honors course. And then we make phone calls to every single student and family to make sure that they understand what they're signing up for and how to best select which courses they do want to take. Sometimes we're having conversations. I can remember last year of having a conversation with a student that they didn't even know they were nominated and didn't know that teachers thought they did as well as they did in their class. So they were so enlightened to know that their teachers think they have this potential. And so they eagerly did sign up. Then they come back to you and say, wow, that was a lot easier than I thought, and I really enjoyed that program. So we have those conversations with students and parents. And then in May and July, we start distributing summer work. The past few years, it has been more of recommended resources. We'd like to make sure that we're not hindering a student that is not able to do summer work, and so that they have the opportunity to participate, whether they have completed that fully or if it's just helping them get through or helping them build background knowledge. So this diagram is basically everything I just said, put into a diagram of how we explain we do things and how we talk through our with our parents and our students. What is not on here is our dual enrollment. We have added many dual enrollment courses in the past year or two, so that this diagram would need to be updated to include dual enrollment.
Yeah, one of the things here from the dual enrollment standpoint, we are at the guidance of the institution. So for example, there's an ACCUPLACER exam for Del Tech. There's also a GPA and SAT requirement potentially. So if they meet the SAT requirement or the GPA requirement, they don't have to take the ACCUPLACER. But if they don't have those two pieces, they have to take the ACCUPLACER exam. Obviously, Wilmington University has different requirements to Del Tech. So it's a little bit different than our AP placement conversation, but that's due to the guidance from the institutions.
Many of our dual enrollment courses are through Del Tech, and they have been wonderful to work with. They have changed the requirements to make sure that it's open to more students. And over the past few years, we've really seen an increase of students taking those courses. Wilmington has always been an open enrollment. And so between those two higher education places, they're really giving us the most for our dual enrollment opportunities. So I really wanted to break down so you could see kind of full scale, that bottom line. I don't know if you can, yeah, there you go. So the grand total from 2017 to 2020, you can see the steady increase over the past 4 years. So the students at the bottom are broken down and are by total, and then you can see broken down by ethnicity above that. Numbers indicate total enrollment. So students could be in this count more than once, but rarely do they do more than one or two honors or AP courses at the same time. I'll just give you a second to be able to look through that. And Sarah, when you're ready. I did break down dual enrollment separately just because we've had an inconsistent data for dual enrollment prior to 2019. I wanted you to really be able to compare apples to apples, and that's not necessarily how we have the data prior to 2019. We have had an increase in major and pathway dual enrollment courses. So prior to 2019, most of those courses were in ELA and math. We have since expanded to social studies electives, which include criminal justice, which has become very popular, along with psychology, and then added pathway courses as well. So, thank you. So moving forward, we want to continue to fine-tune the enrollment process to ensure that all students have access to AP honors and dual enrollment courses and have overall success in these courses. We're going to play a quick video that this just highlights the Superstars in Education Award that we received a couple years ago. And then I'll loop back for questions. Can you hear me? Okay, great. So before I close, I want to thank our entire MCA and MHS staff. Their dedication to this program has really expanded everything and all that we do for our students. So thank you. And I especially want to thank Renee Worley, our math specialist. She has put a lot of time into the data collection for us and helped lead our selection days. So I did not want her to go unnoticed. Are there any questions? Any questions from the board?
This is Jason Miller. We seem to have collected excellent data on enrollment, but do we also have placing into the college credit?
Mr. Miller, I am so sorry. I don't know if it was just me, but I lost you completely when you were talking. I think it was all of us, Jason.
Yeah, I apologize. We're having a pretty good thunderstorm right here, so my connection might be scrambled. Hopefully you can hear this better. My question is about, we have good data on enrollment, but do we...
I think we lost them again right there.
Yeah, same spot. Yeah. So I think he's wanting to know if we have any good data on the dual enrollment. I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Jason. Quick.
Sorry. Yep. My question is,
Dr. Marvel, I think
we need a chat box.
We have on the AP testing.
Jason, there is a box that you could type your question to if you want to. Mr. Thompson has pointed that out. It shows like a bubble down at the bottom of your picture where you're you'll see where your speaker is, and then the camera about 5 down is a bubble.
Dr. Marvel, I think he was alluding to success in the courses. So we have information as far as to really show the success our students have had as far as, I think, probably some of the dual enrollment credits earned, which we've seen increases there, but then also proficiency rates with AP exams. So I think that's what he was discussing. Ms. Wiley, is that what you were kind of, and there's really more about the success in the courses, correct?
Okay. Thank you for that. So yes, we have data. It is reported individually by students. So I would need to kind of loop back around and try to get that data for you in a better format. I do know that as we have looked as a collective, we were worried that as we expanded our numbers, that success rates would not necessarily go up just because of giving opportunities to all students. However, our students have risen to the occasion, and we've seen at least the same, if not better, success scores. I do not have the exact data, and I would have to get that for you.
I would say that was one of the things when we really expanded numbers, we were wondering about the success data. So I would say our data decreased a little bit, you know, from that period of time, but I know when we won the superstars there, our data, which was pretty impressive, stayed very consistent what we had before with the increased numbers. I think we did take a little bit of a decrease last year in it, but we'll have to bring the numbers back here to you. I mean, one thing that has happened, obviously have more college-related courses that obviously really help our students from a perspective of achieving and accomplishing and completing challenging coursework. Also now also bringing a stronger transcript to post-secondary institutions to review. And we do with our really our dual enrollment increases have really, course increases have really increased our numbers of college type credit that has been earned. The success rate in AP has been the one that's been a little bit more flat looking at it over the last, I don't have this past year's data, but over the last couple of years, that's been a little bit more flat as far as the AP achievement data.
I would just add that our dual enrollment achievement is very high, that our students are successfully getting through that, completing pathways and completing English and math dual enrollment programs and receiving those credits. Again, yes, we would need to dig a little deeper into the AP success rate.
Well, Ms. Marvel, I'd just like to say that on behalf of two of my granddaughters who've been in the high school, one who just graduated and one who is a freshman, one took AP classes this year, did very well, and the other one took the dual enrollment two classes and received A pluses and everything. So. And receive college credit. So I think that they were excellent and it was a great opportunity for her.
Thank you. Yes, we hope that is the same feeling of all of our students.
Are there any other comments or questions from the board?
This is Ronnie, Dr. Marvel, and Mr. Parsley, I would like to thank you for what you do and continue to do to seek an inclusive AP and honors program that really reflects our growing diverse student population in our schools. With that said, I do have a couple questions. Do you agree that students of low income or diverse students who take rigorous courses such as honors or AP or dual enrollment have a much higher rate of attending college and a lower chance of dropping out of school?
Mr. Balthazar Lopez, I would say thank you for the question. Yes, again, I would loop back to saying that I think it gives them confidence. So whether it is to go to college or whether it's to go to the workforce, Trayvon was in that video and he is my prime example for this, is that he said in the video that he was thinking about dropping, and I often wonder if people think that he was thinking about dropping out of high school while he had a very difficult home life. He was one that thought about dropping that AP course, but with a lot of help and a lot of encouragement, he was very successful in the course, did get the credits, did pass those courses, and he is now very successfully in the military, where that was not something that he saw in his future. And I think it's just feeling the success and teachers behind him and helping him see what's out there. Is all part of that. And not to say that's only honors and AP and dual enrollment gives that opportunity. I feel that our teachers are very strong and, you know, really support our students at any level. But I think Trayvon's one of the perfect examples of that. So, yes.
Thank you. I really appreciated that example. My next question is, do you believe teachers can you hear me?
Yes, you cut out there for a moment.
Okay. Do you believe that teachers who have a perception that rigorous courses are not for all students harms the student's perception of his or her capabilities of this class?
Mr. Parsley, I don't want to take over. I'll certainly let you speak to this as well. But if I thought a teacher was in that situation, that yes, I think that not necessarily their perception, but how backed the student feels and how supported the student feels goes a long way. I am very thankful, and I've had a wonderful opportunity to work with all the teachers that are teaching these courses, and I have seen nothing but support for our students and advocating for our students. And nine times out of 10, it's our teachers that are saying, hey, I want this student in my class. I want to make him or her successful. So I think we have a great group of teachers that are supportive for all of our students.
But I think a part of this, Mr. Balthazar Lopez, is that it's about confidence and having the adults around you believe in you. And I believe the body language and language itself really goes a long way with those students that are entering that AP honors field that for that first time or that dual enrollment for the first time, because it is unclear. And oftentimes we, you know, as Dr. Marvel stated earlier, you know, many of those type of honors classes and the honor selection at the younger levels, while albeit important pieces of the puzzle, it reduces the number of opportunities for other students. So when they finally get to high school and we offer so many other classes, it really opens up opportunities. You know, you and I talked at graduation about a couple of young ladies that we had signed up for AP language and composition, and that was their first exposure to an AP course or a dual enrollment course, and they were juniors in high school, and they never felt that they were capable of doing the work until they actually got there and the teacher encouraged them to that they are capable of doing the work. So that confidence that they get from teachers, it means so much to them because they don't necessarily get it in all avenues, whether it be from the homes or from their peers or anything like that. So when they finally hear that from one of the adults that care about them in our building, it really goes a long way from an effort standpoint and a commitment standpoint. And then they obviously reap the rewards in the end. Success on the AP exam or not, at the end of the day, those kids are going to be so much better off for taking that course and struggling through it. Obviously, we want threes, fours, and fives. We do. But just taking that class alone and getting through it and recognizing that they're capable of doing college-level work just means so much to those kiddos.
Thank you. I also believe that, too. My next question is, given that Smarter Balance scores are used as one of the data points for students entering ninth grade, NPSAT/SAT scores are used as one of the data points to identify students already at the high school level. The Smarter Balance scores, or PSAT/SAT scores, have a much bigger weight than course grades or teacher/parent recommendations when evaluating students into the honors and AP courses. And I only ask because, as you may know, Smarter Balance scores and PSAT or SAT scores are not always indicative of a student's intelligence or their performance.
I think you're spot on with that. While it is one indicator that we use, it is probably the lowest on the totem pole. We really work towards working with our teachers and our students to see what the potential is. Sorry, there's like claps of thunder going behind me. But I would say yes, while we look at that, we look at potential of the student. And while we know not everybody is a great test taker or a standardized test taker, they could very successfully get through a course.
Thank you. As indicated by the PowerPoint, the review committee includes content teachers, building, and district administrators. So my question is, are we placing diverse teachers on those committees as well?
Absolutely. We want to make sure that all of our students are kind of identified and represented so that not only to make sure that they're diverse, but we're getting a diverse sense of inclusion and knowing that if one teacher is saying that they're going to be successful in English, they can speak for that student that could be successful in social studies as well. So I'll say that our teachers advocate for our students so well, and that 9 times out of 10, you'll see them, you know, advocating for the kid to get put into a social studies class when they're the English teacher, just because they know they've had success and know the potential of our students. So, yeah.
And I think in recent years, these meetings have turned into let's find opportunities for these students and not, and I can't speak for 5, 6, 7 years ago, but it always seemed to me as that they were looking for opportunities to exclude students, where these meetings are really about finding a way to include students. So test scores and things like that, while they're indicators, they're not nearly weighted as much as what we know about the kiddos.
Okay, great, thank you. So say a student who gets rejected to get into the honors or AP courses and tries to appeal that decision, what is that process for such an appeal?
Well, students can meet with any administrator. You know, there's request forms that students can fill out and meet with and talk with an administrator, talk with their school counselor. There is an appeals process. It's not a formal one, but we do meet with students on a regular basis. And in fact, we had a student who graduated last year. He was not included. All the indicators just said this student would really struggle in that particular course. And he scheduled a meeting with Mr. Snyder and I and came in shirt, tie, and sold himself on why he belonged in that class. And his statement was, I will be as successful as the people that are in the class. And if I'm in the right classes, I will have more success. And he's like, I know my GPA is not where it should be. I know that I messed around in courses, but I know if I'm around better people, I will be better. And it was kind of an interesting conversation from a young man, you know, that that recognize that he needs to work harder and he needs to take more challenging courses and things like that. And obviously we do review that on a regular basis to make sure that we're including as many students as possible.
I agree. Thank you. For students who are new to the rigorous courses, what plans of actions or assistance is there for them? While we want to increase the enrollment of students into these classes, we also want to ensure that we can retain those students the following year.
So I think our teachers have done a lot to make sure they build up that program. Many students are in what we call a study. It's not, Mr. Parsley, help me out. I'm trying to remember the study skills, but a course that can help give them some time for some tutoring and that sort of thing. And then also many of our teachers are doing before school and after school and lunch sessions to help them figure out the study skills of to know how exactly to take the test or take practice tests, and many opportunities outside of the classroom to make sure that they're ready for the test, but also ready for the rigorous course load.
Right. And after school or after the Bell program specifically was designed around providing, you know, as we grew with these programs, the After the Bell program was an essential part of it, because Mr. Baltazar Lopez, you're correct. If we put them in the class, but we don't provide them with supports and they struggle, they won't come back the next year. So that After the Bell program was really a big part of the success in those, really 4 years ago, 3 years ago, to make sure that students had opportunities after school to meet with teachers, content area teachers, to make sure that they had, had their questions answered and things like that. And the use of Schoology and discussion boards and things of that nature that have really grown, their use has grown as well. And that actually provides them with another resource. So not only to communicate with their teachers, but to communicate with their peers to get, to get some clearer understanding. And there's no better form of mastery than when a peer is teaching another peer how to do something.
And I'll just add quickly that I feel like it's a team effort. I can't tell you how many times I saw a sample student, Trayvon, working with his JDG teacher, who was not his AP bio teacher, but his JDG teacher is doing, study sessions with him and making it practical work and relating it to real life. And so everybody's bought in and everybody wants to help our kids.
I appreciate that. My last question is, I was looking at the statistics. What demographics are Haitian students identified as? Are they identified as African American?
That would be however they identify themselves on. So it may be a mix. I would say the majority would be African American. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
So it's how they check the box on the AP score or in our e-school. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So again, thank you for taking the time to present this for us. Please note that this is not a criticism of our district. I know we have grown a lot since I was there. I take AP enrollment personally because I was a student who was denied enrollment into the AP program when I was at Milford High School. I was told that my PSAT scores and my then DSTP scores were too low, even though my course grades were perfect. It wasn't until my teacher, who is now an assistant principal at the high school, vouched for me because my parents couldn't, partly due to their inability to speak English. But even then, when I got into one of those AP classes, at the time, my teacher lacked confidence in me and told me that if I wasn't up for the work, that I should probably drop the course. So needless to say that I passed the exam with a 5 and ended up graduating with 18 AP credits. I went on to college, had the privilege of working in the U.S. Congress, and now serve on the school board. So I take this very personal because I don't want any student and our district to have to go through something similar like that. And I know that with the administration now, I know that I'm reassured that we're not leaving any student behind, because that is what a public education is for. So again, I thank you. And Madam Chair, I have no further questions.
Well, Ronnie, we're glad that you have been so successful and you are a great role model for other students. So thank you. And I know that you're very passionate about this. So noted. And thank you, Dr. Kate Marvel, and also Mr. Jesse Parsley for this presentation. I think it's always good to see how well our students are doing and the opportunities that they do have. So thank you.
Thank you.
If there are no other comments, I'd like to move on to Director of Student Services, Ms. Laura Mangus. I'm sure we are all interested in hearing about the summer program.
Good evening. How is everyone this evening? I hope doing well.
So far, if we don't get struck by lightning.
We have spent the last few weeks since we last met formulating protocols, communicating with parents, hiring teachers, and preparing to train, along with ordering all of the supplies that we will need in order to run a successful 12-month program for our students. As I mentioned at our last meeting, we had about 65 students. We're now up to about 70 students. So 2 weeks ago, letters went home that just laid out the acknowledgement of students' 12-month entitlement based on their disability classification. It talked about the dates, which just to revisit for all of you, will begin July 13th and run through August 6th. It will be a four-day-a-week, four-week intensive program that we will be offering to all of our students who qualify based on their classification eligibility. In addition to sending the letter that gave parents locations and times and dates, there will be a meal served during the program. So we also were asked to include this letter, which gives parents and guardians a bit of guidance. It's a protocol for all of our students and families that we will be using in the fall. It came from a collaboration from our State Department of Education and DHSS, which encourages parents at home to initially screen their children. It highlights some of the areas that they might want to spend some additional attention with, encouraging them to keep their children at home, teaching at home about hand washing, utilizing face coverings, teaching children how to cover coughs and sneezes, and then social distancing information, as well as connecting them once again to the school nurses who will be in each building working with our kiddos. So Thursday of this week, we will be doing a training. Our liaison to the Health and Wellness Committee at the state with regard to reopening, Sue Smith, will be heading that training. She has spent an enormous amount of time working with Dr. Peel and myself, as well as Mr. Lobiondo, who's overseeing the transportation component, our communication with parents. And then we will be meeting with all of our staff to include all of our nurses, our drivers, our teachers, our custodians, and all of our specialists. There's an additional protocol that you're looking at now that will be reviewed with all of those folks. And at the end of this, Mr. Lobiondo, I'm going to give you an opportunity as well. Mr. Lobiondo did a very extensive training with the drivers and the bus aides. So they are prepared based on state and national guidelines for transporting safely. We were able to identify, as I said, 20 paras and teachers that are very excited to bring our students back. We will run 6 classrooms at Morris and 3 classrooms at MCA. We have the structure of those classrooms identified. All of that information along with rosters went out. The maximum class size is 7 and most have only 5. There's so much information. I'm just trying to kind of summarize. So I know that the 3 main areas that we developed protocols around were transportation, sharing with parents and guardians, and then our staff training. We also have all of our equipment ready to go, and that will be handed out to everyone on Thursday in preparation of Monday, the 13th, our first day. People will receive specialized face masks that came in that actually have a clear window in them so that you can see people's mouths when they're talking. We will have goggles and face shields
We have gloves and gowns along with the trifold dividers for when we're working with students in a more one-on-one or evaluatory type of setting. And if you take a look at the protocol that is going to go to all of our teachers on Thursday, it talks about the fact that they will also be receiving wipes and hand sanitizers in their classrooms. I know, had spoken earlier in this meeting about water bottles, so we worked with our cafeteria staff to have the small cases of water bottles. So those will be located at each student's desk when they open, along with an identified box of individual supplies that each student is going to be provided that will be closed and sanitized at the end of each day. Trying to think about any questions that any of you might have in regard to how we are proceeding.
Under our school and the handling of.
I looked over your list and it looks very comprehensive. So I think it's really good that we have the opportunity to try to put into practice all these things that we may end up having to do as a school year progresses. So it is an opportunity to see how things work.
Our staff is very excited. Kudos to them. They just have been longing to see children directly and work directly with them again. So it was not a difficult task. It took some time just talking with people and making sure that we had everybody in place that we would need to offer supports. And I also want to offer Mr. Lobiondo, who did some extensive training with our drivers and bus aides, the opportunity to share some of that. Mr. Lobiondo, are you here as well?
This is Dave. If I could jump in real quick, I feel like maybe we've lost some board members.
Yes, we lost Ms. Russ here due to power. Do you know that?
I'm on, but I find it easier to turn my video off. I'm getting better connectivity with everybody else. That's the only reason I closed it down.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at the list and I didn't see everybody, so I just want to make sure we still had everybody.
Do we want to do a simple roll call?
I'm still here, even though I've lost my electricity.
I'll do a simple roll call if that's okay. We just check real quick. I know I have a couple people here like they're texting me and telling me they've lost power. So let me see, Mr. Balthazar Lopez. Mr. Balthazar Lopez.
Here.
Thank you.
Here.
Mrs. Purcell. Mrs. Purcell. Mr. Thompson.
Here.
Bedmar.
I'm here.
Mrs. Wiley. Renata Wiley.
I'm here.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
I can see Jean, but I don't hear her.
I'm here.
This is for sale. I think we lost Ms. Purcell. I know we lost Ms. Rust, and I think we lost maybe Ms. Croce too.
I don't think we have any other folks on at this time, but if there are any questions, I'm glad to address them.
The other avenue we have, Ms. Wiley, for this evening is, and we could combine it with maybe something if we get some of the information early next week. We could almost come back next week sometime and like maybe adjourn this evening and then just add these to maybe next week and make sure we post with 7 days notice. It's up to you. We can continue to try to continue through the meeting, or we could adjourn and come back, you know, and table the other remaining items until next week. It's up to you and the board.
Okay. So at this point, we have, I don't know if we've lost Jean now or not. Ms. Wiley, are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, okay. So it looks like the only member that we have lost in is Mrs. Purcell, is that correct? Did Ms.
Ms. Purcell is not on at this point.
And I did not hear Mr. Miller.
He responded earlier, but I think he's been out a little bit too, I believe. Mr. Miller?
I'm here.
So the only one that we've lost is Mr. Purcell. Okay. It is the discretion of the board. Would you like to continue or would you like to try to fill a quorum? So we are okay for that.
I'm having a hard time hearing everything in detail, what everybody's saying. I would hate to vote on something that we can't hear in its entirety. And as much as I hate to delay a meeting or stop in the middle of what we're doing because we're getting close to the end anyway, it's getting very difficult. Even when Dr. Dickerson was talking, I couldn't hear everything he said, nor could I everything that you said. So I almost think unless we can get something corrected here, which obviously Mother Nature is kind of dictating it, we might be safer to defer the rest of the calendar or the agenda until the next meeting.
And everything can hold off. It's not urgent, everything that we have here right this evening. We can come back and talk about next week. And if we do have some of the information from the state, we could have that to share then too. It's up to you here this evening.
Yeah, I would agree with that because of the difficulties we're having and the way the storm looks on the radar, we're not even, I mean, it's getting ready to hit, I know at least me, a lot harder than it is right now. So I think we're going to continue to have these difficulties. So my opinion would be that we hold off until the next meeting.
Okay, well, we have done the most important thing as far as passing our TAC proposal. So that was something we had to do tonight. So that is... May I have a motion from the board to adjourn the rest of this meeting and reschedule it for next week?
So moved. This is Ronnie Baltazar.
Okay. I have a motion from Mr. Baltazar Lopez. Do I have a second?
Chris Thompson will second.
Okay. Are there any questions regarding the motion? If not, then Dr. Dickerson, would you go ahead and do a roll call?
Yes, Mr. Baltazar Lopez.
I saw his mouth move. He said aye.
Mr. Miller.
Aye.
Mrs. Purcell. Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
Mr. Besmar.
Aye.
Mrs. Renata Wiley.
Aye.
Mrs. Jean Wiley.
Aye.
Let it be noted that the board has decided to adjourn this meeting tonight, and we will continue with it next week.